The recent news that Zika virus has been caught within the United States in Florida is of great concern to health officials and the general public. Zika is one of many diseases that can be spread by mosquitoes, and that's why there are agencies that work to control mosquitoes all over the country. No one is talking about Zika in our neck of the woods. I want to emphasize that. But there are control agencies here, and with anything involving pests and pesticides, some discussion about proper methods of control. We'll hear concerns about the methods later. Right now, we'll hear from Jim Lunders, who is the Jackson County Vector Control District Manager and biologist. Jim, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the basics. Vector control districts, apparently, you worked for several across the country. Are they pretty common in rural areas?
Generally, they're very common in areas that traditionally had mosquito-borne disease. So in Oregon, the majority of programs were actually created because of Western equine encephalitis. And in other parts of the country, there's different diseases that have impacted the public there in the past. So that's the primary. Almost all the districts were created as a response to mosquito-borne disease.
And so when you talk about equine encephalitis, we're talking about these are generally concerns about diseases of livestock or humans or a bit of each.
So Western equine encephalitis, like West Nile virus that we see now, it impacts horses, but it also impacts people. So that's its name. But the reason the districts were created was because people were getting sick.
And how big an area are responsible for controlling is? Does the vector control district cover all of Jackson County?
Correct. So it's just under 1.8 million acres, so the entirety of Jackson County.
Wow, that's a big area.
Correct.
And how many employees are the vector control district?
So there are three of us full-time, and we have 10 seasonals.
Okay. So more people certainly working this time of year, I'm going to guess, when
Correct.
Mosquitoes are out and about.
Yeah, during the mosquito season.
Is it just mosquitoes, or are there other vectors or other critters you're controlling for?
We primarily are responsible for mosquito control. We have public information and things like that about rats and flies as well. But really our primary focus is mosquitoes, and that's the only thing we go out and actively control.
Okay, I want to come back and emphasize again, Zika virus is not on your radar at this point in Jackson County, I'm assuming, because you're just talking South Florida and more tropical places.
So it is very unlikely we will ever see Zika. We do not have the two known vectors of the Zika virus. We don't know for certain that one of the 50 species of mosquitoes we have in Oregon can't transmit the virus, but none of those species act like the two vectors as far as close habitation to people. Those two species that they're dealing with really are perfectly designed for making people sick just because of the way that they go about their lives. So it's even if we have a competent vector, it's not likely that we'll have the same problem as they do in areas with Aedes aegypti and albopictus.
I was going to say Aedes aegypti. I remember hearing that from somebody else who researched Zika. That's the big one. But it's another whole species of mosquito, too, that can apparently transmit Zika now.
So the two they're very concerned with are Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus. They're both container breeding mosquitoes. They both bite during the day, and they both primarily feed on people. They are far different than any species we deal with. So just because of their ecology, they're a lot more difficult to control than the species we have here in Oregon.
Okay, so again, Zika is not an issue here, but we have had, as you mentioned, West Nile virus. And what's this? Have we had human cases yet in Jackson County?
It's been a few years ago. There was a human case in Josephine County last year. We've been able to catch the virus as it's moving through the animal and mosquito stages and identify the areas where we're seeing virus every year and do control efforts to minimize the impacts to people. So we did have a horse case in Jackson County last year, but other than that, we just had birds and mosquito pools test positive last year.
And when you talk about mosquito pools, I was surprised that looking at some of the stuff you put out of the vector control district, it doesn't take much water in terms of surface area to become a breeding place for mosquitoes.
No, you know, that it's anything that holds water for a week can produce. Standing water for a week can produce mosquitoes. in the case of Aegyptine albopictus, which we don't have, but when I was in, I worked in Louisiana, we would see those in things as small as pop bottle caps that had filled with water.
Really?
Here we routinely see mosquito larvae in things like dog water bowls, bird baths, just things that people don't think of are really good at producing mosquitoes. And unfortunately, those small backyard sources produce mosquitoes that are most likely to carry disease. They're Culex mosquitoes, usually Culex pipiens, and those mosquitoes are the ones that are most likely to transmit West Nile virus.
Jim Lunders is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Jackson County Vector Control District Manager and Biologist. You can join our discussion as we talk about control methods for mosquitoes. 800-838-3760 over the phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. So it looks like when you're going after mosquitoes, is a two-part process, is investigation first and then treatment. Is that a fair assessment of it?
Yeah, it's about five parts, but yeah, everything's driven by surveillance, whether it's larval control or adult control. You have to see what's there so you know how to properly control the problem. You know, we use dipping when we're looking for larvae to assess, you know, how many are there, what species are there, so we know what products to use. In the case of adult mosquitoes, we have 60 traps that are spread throughout the county that we check weekly. We also have other traps we set in response to phone calls, etc., to assess what is the density of mosquitoes in that area, what species are present, and that, you know, that's twofold. One, that tells us where they likely came from, so we can focus our larval control efforts, try to find those sources so we don't have adult mosquitoes there next time, and then know whether we need to make a control, you know, make an application to control those adult mosquitoes. We also take those adult mosquitoes and test them for mosquito-borne disease. So, you know, if we find West Nile virus, for instance, we know that we need to ramp up our efforts in that area.
Is the preference to control in the larval stage, though, to get them to keep them from becoming adult mosquitoes?
Absolutely. You know, it doesn't make any sense to start have your whole control effort based on adult mosquito control, because that's your last line of defense. I mean, it's better to control them by reducing the larval sources, so getting rid of as much of those larval sources as possible so they never even got a chance to lay eggs in those places and produce them. But if they do produce larvae, then if we can control them either, you know, like bird baths, ornamental ponds, water troughs, a lot of those things we can put mosquito fish in and control them without using a mosquito control product. But a lot of places we can't, so we use, you know, we use naturally occurring soil bacteria, BTI, and Bacillus ferricus and spinosad to control the larva. And then, you know, our trapping shows us where we have areas with adult mosquitoes we need to control.
And the BTI will kill the larvae in the water?
Correct.
Okay. And what does it do to the water? Does it make it in any way unusable for humans or pets or anything?
Well, BTI is extremely safe. It's the most targeted product we have. It only impacts a very narrow spectrum of insects, mosquitoes being one, and two, black flies, the kind that live in fast-moving streams that bite. Also, they're very closely related. So by just taking out the mosquito larva out of those larval habitats, the other filter-feeding insects, generally their populations greatly increase because they don't have the mosquitoes as competition anymore. So,
all right. I want to come back to mosquito fish later because that's a really interesting thing here. But when you're dealing with killing adult mosquitoes, then what's the general approach there? What's the machinery? What's the chemical set?
So right now we're using a product called DeltaGuard, which is deltamethrin. It's one of the Environmental Protection Agency's reduced risk pesticides, and we use a ULV machine, ultra low volume cold fogger. And what that does is it makes the product into an aerosol. So it uses a high speed spinning disc to break the particles up into 20 to 30 micron droplets, which is the best size to impinge on a flying adult mosquito and to control them.
It's a really fine mist then.
Correct.
Okay. Jim Lunders, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about mosquito control methods. He's the Jackson County Vector Control District Manager and biologist. You can join in at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So you're flinging Delta Guard into the air, and how does that work on adult mosquitoes? How does it render them ineffective?
So it impacts their nervous system. So basically, it only works if they're flying. So that's why we make applications when we do. Mosquitoes are most active at dawn and dusk. Because of winds and other things, we mostly make applications at around dawn here. So as the mosquito's flying, the droplet impinges on them, and it actually, because they're respiring very fast because they're flying, it brings that particle into their body and then it impacts their nervous system and kills them that way.
What are the effects of Delta Guard? What are the warnings that come on the label in terms of whether or not it should be around people, whether it should be around pets, other animals?
Yeah, so for instance, for loading and handling and all those things for our employees, all that's required for personal protection equipment for Delta Guard is to wear a long sleeve shirt, long pants, and shoes. So that's basically the generic personal protection equipment for anybody. It doesn't require a respirator. It doesn't require any of those things. So the impact to mammals is extremely low. And then as far as other things, there's environmental warnings on the label. And those mostly deal with the products so you don't misuse the product. It's important to remember that if you use the product according to the label, by law, it has to have minimal impact to people or the environment. That's the law. So it needs to do its job, and by doing the product or using the product properly, the risk to people or non-target organisms is very low.
How do you mentioned usually around dawn is when you tend to
Correct.
Do the spraying, and how do you choose the location, and how often would you have to apply?
So we use our traps, our surveillance program, and see where we're having large numbers of adult mosquitoes, and how often we have to make applications is based on how often there's a problem in an area. There's some areas that are more difficult to control than others. Some places the larval habitats we simply can't treat. There's just not a way to get to them. That's really common. We have a lot of areas that are so overgrown with blackberries that without the ability to do larval control from the air, which we don't currently have that option, there's no way to get the product into those areas to control the larva. So there's areas that are simply, there's no way to control them effectively at this time.
When you're going to spray with the Delta Guard and do the fogging, do you give any warnings to the people in the areas where you're spraying?
So we maintain a website where we put the maps every afternoon before we make applications, as well as a Facebook page, and we also have people can sign up for email notification as well. So we put those on the website in the afternoon before we make the applications the next morning at 3 to 6 a.m.
3 to 6 a.m. Okay, so you guys work a lot of early mornings or late nights or one or the other. What can people opt out? Can they call Vector Control and say, look, I see myself on the map for tomorrow. I really don't want this around my house. What options do they have?
Well, it's difficult for us to do it that quickly, but we do have we do maintain a no spray list, so people can sign up for that, and we won't make an adult mosquito application within 300 feet of their property unless we are having mosquito-borne disease in the area. So they can opt out if we're not currently having active virus transmission in the area.
How long is the no-spray list? Have a lot of people opted onto that?
Yeah, it's we've got more people on this year than previously. They had the no-spray list before my time coming here to the district. We went through – it hadn't been updated in a while, so we went through it and put it on the website. So it's a lot better now. We also have a new mapping system, so it's easier for the employees to know that they're coming close to one and make sure they shut the equipment off before they get there.
Okay, we've got a couple of phone calls with questions for you. Jim Lunders, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is with Jackson County Vector Control, manager and biologist. Here's Grumpy John at Grants Pass. Welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, if you take a tire, cut it in half, put a sleeve over it, say a pair of Levi's, then if you put this tire in a horizontal position and rotate it so that the water in the tire filters through that Levi filter, then you can screen out the larva. Now, also, water that has larva in it will attract other mosquitoes so that they lay their eggs in that larva-infested water. So by rotating the tire every once in a while, every few days, you would essentially filter out all the mosquito larvae. It's a non-chemical way of controlling the existence of mosquitoes with non-toxic.
So you're making essentially a trap for the larvae, is that what you're saying?
You're making it. Essentially, you're running the water through a screen every few days by turning it. Therefore, the larva stays on one side, and they dry out and die. But the infected, so to speak, water will still attract more mosquitoes. So by turning the tire every once in a while, you filter out all the mosquitoes, larvae that are in the tire.
Okay, let's run this past Jim and see if it's something he's heard about. Jim Lunders, is it something you have, a technique you've come in contact with?
Well, it's not something we used. I'll be honest, in general, the best thing people can do with waste tires is have them disposed of properly so they're no longer a source of mosquitoes at all. Traps in general don't work to control mosquitoes. They simply don't get rid of enough of them. When you think about the average 5-gallon bucket can produce thousands of mosquitoes a week, if you have a trap in your yard that's catching a few hundred a night, you just don't keep up with it. So, however, source reduction around your home, getting rid of those old tires, dumping over buckets, anything you can do to get rid of those sources has a huge impact on mosquito numbers. So we always are encouraging people to go around their yards, especially after rain events, and take a look and try to make sure you're not raising mosquitoes in your backyard. The other thing that a lot of people miss is they're working in the garden and they leave the wheelbarrow or something in there, and then the sprinklers fill it with water, and 10 days later you go out to weed the garden again and get eight alive. So it's hard to remember those things, but it's important.
Here's another call from Christina in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jim Lunders from Jackson County Vector Control.
Thank you. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I couldn't hear you for a second. Yes, I'm speaking to you on behalf of Pollinator Project Rogue Valley. I've had some conversations with Jim before, and I do want to say I'm so glad that Vector Control is putting information out on their website about the locations of spraying, and that the no-spray list is existing and that people are finding out about this. I know that you're using the Delta Guard, that's 2% deltamethrin, and then there's 98% inert ingredients, which, of course, means we don't know what those are. And yes, the label is the law, but I would like to state that the label states that Delta Guard is toxic to bees and aquatic creatures. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, honeybees won't be out there on the greenway, but moths and native bees and other pollinators, they don't have hives. And I can go out in my garden every morning before the sun comes up, and I'll see native bumblebees, I'll see red-shouldered moths, and they're right there on the plants. If there's this television, I could show you a picture. So these bees and moths, they're fairly large. The yellow-faced bumblebee, they're very common around here. The red-shouldered moth, they're large. So you can spot those. But what about the smaller beneficial insects that are out there? They have to sleep somewhere. And, you know.
All right. So let's get a response. Thanks for that, Christina. Appreciate it. So how much discussion is there of chemicals and whether there are different options for you?
So I wish we didn't have to make any adult mosquito applications. I'd love to control all the mosquitoes as larvae, but like I said earlier, that's more difficult than it might seem sometimes, especially in some areas. But it's also important to remember that how we make the applications, the amount we use, and when we make the applications has a big impact on whether or not we have adverse impacts to non-target species. That's why we make the applications when we do. And a good example, if you look at the label for apastin, which is used by beekeepers in their hives to control mites, if you look on the back on the environmental impact statement, on the back it says toxic to bees because it is a pyrethroid, and if it's used improperly, it will kill bees. And that's the same with the products we use. If we don't make applications correctly, we run the chance of having adverse impacts on these non-target species. And that's why our machines are calibrated. That's why our employees are trained. And that's why we make the applications at the right time of day. So there's always concerns that somebody could do something improperly and you could have an adverse impact. But we've done everything we can to mitigate that, and we only make applications when we need to control the mosquito population.
Based on some of the concerns expressed just now by that caller and by Protect Jackson County, are there any further changes you would consider making, or are you pretty much in the slot where you think you need to be?
Well, you know, we only have a small number of products we can use, mm-hmm. And we've done everything that I know of currently we can do to minimize those impacts. Could the program improve? We can always improve. That's what we try to do every year. That's why I go to trainings constantly. That's why I train my crew. So we're always trying to move forward and do a better job every year so we can continue to protect public health.
All right. Jim Lunder is manager and biologist at Jackson County Vector Control. Thanks for joining us today in the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Take care.